Hey, Chad.
What's up?
What's up? Thorchain GMI. The name is fitting these days.
I had the space go last night. You guys did one with Kyber Swap, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun space. Really excited about that integration. Like one thing that just stood out to me a lot with having the Kyber liquidity aggregated is just like how often it's the best swap. Really impressive. So if people haven't seen those routes popping up yet, like check it out because it's often the best. So that's a really helpful integration. And then, you know, they're exploring cross-chain swaps on their end as well, which, you know, obviously that's really exciting.
Yeah, that was one thing I noticed using ThorSwap the past couple of days. The Kyber swap route is like really nice for ETH pairs, especially. It gives really good price for almost every route that goes through it, and usually better than uni.
Yeah, exactly. That's what impressed me too. It seems like 80% of the time, I don't know the number, but a lot of the time it's the top one, which is great. Yeah, I don't know about you. I've just been like absolutely addicted to ThorChain stuff this week. Like, I don't know. I can't take my eyes off of it. I feel like
it's too hard.
Yeah, every week we get on here and we're just like, wow, like so much has happened in the last week. But I don't know, this week especially, I feel like I've been glued to Twitter, Discord, just everything. It's just the most addicting thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know. I've been working hard on all the redacted stuff, so I'm looking forward to when this finally happens very, very soon.
Always love a good redacted.
It's been fun to watch the savers just kind of like go up, you know? Just like check it every day, like look at the chain, like I think we surpassed 4 million or something like this now, so it's like pretty fun to watch.
Every day, check the chain. Yeah, it feels like just days ago we were watching it get to 1 million and then 2 million and then 3 and 4 just happened like in what, 3 days or something, 4 days?
Yeah, real fast. So now we're going to start kind of talking to the community and talking about, you know, raising the caps and you know, where we should do that or shouldn't do that and debate the pros, debate the cons and figure out what we want to do as a community.
Yeah, definitely want to dig into that quite a bit. Really want to understand all the kind of like the different risk profiles of the different synth caps and dig into POL. I'm pretty fuzzy on POL to be honest, so I still want to ask some dumb questions when we get to that, just to try to really grasp it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's first on the list? What's the first item we want to talk about from the last week of ThorChain?
Oh man, let's see. Cow said he's fixing his headphones.
I think it's better. Oh, sorry, like the noise canceling thing wasn't working, so I could not hear myself. So all right, everything's good now. Yeah. So let's talk about savers and POL because I think that's kind of top of everyone's mind. I think because savers is like 3 weeks old now, and the last 2 days of savers just went absolutely bonkers once the calculation got fixed to see like how much is left. I feel like people started like, oh god, there's only it went from like, you know, 30 or 40% full to like 80% overnight, and then it was just, you know, just tapped it in into basically 100% Bitcoin being full in savers. So like it's just looking incredible, over 3 mil in the vaults right now. Real nice. So let's talk a little bit about, sorry, I don't know if you guys just said it, but you want to talk about what's going on with the vote to increase the caps, and then how POL is gonna start to work its way in there, and how we're gonna start scaling savers vaults.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of like kind of so there's a few things to consider, right? So right now we're at the synth caps at 15% of the pool depth, right? Which is, you know, a good starting place. And so the more synths that are in the pool, right, or the higher quantity of synths versus like layer one assets in the pool, basically the riskier the protocol gets in some sense, right? So for example, the situation that you don't want to see happen is that the synths value, the total like dollar value of all the synths together in a particular pool, is greater than the total dollar value of the pool itself, of the layer one assets plus the rune. Because then you get a situation where like it's the pool that is, you know, that is backing the value of the synths, right? That it is the collateral of the synths in some sense. So you can get to a kind of a bad situation there. And then in addition to that, like, and if that were to happen for some reason, then effectively LPs would get wiped out, right? Like their position would be near zero, and the SINTS holders would collect all their value in a sense, which is obviously a bad situation. So right now we're at a 15%, 15% asset death relative to the SINTS cap relative to the asset death, so that the pool death. And so in order for that to happen, that hypothetical scenario, that kind of extreme scenario, you'd have to see a 43x price change in Rune's price to go down, for example. So we're at like $1.40 now or whatever it is. So divide that by 43, and that's the price that would become, you know, dangerous for the protocol. So I don't think anybody's really concerned about a 43x price change on Rune, because that's pretty nutty in many respects. But as you get closer and closer to like a higher and higher, that number changes. I think the intention of a lot of the devs is to put it to like a 50% relative to pool depth. And so that would require a 4x price change of Rune going down versus the assets to get to that hypothetical scenario. And the reason why 50% is the number is for a specific reason. That is that if we were to enable the POL under 50%, let's say we put it at like, you know, 25% or something like this, or let's say we enable right now, right, at 15% utilization, for every dollar of savers that goes into the savings system, the POL would have to put in $6 worth of Rune on the other side. So you're creating a dollar of buy pressure of Rune, and then you're creating $6 of sell pressure on Rune, which we don't like that, right? We don't want to create that would mean that every time somebody is adding to savers or contributing to savers, they're creating sell pressure on the Rune asset, which is the opposite of what we want. Today, if somebody deploys something to savers, it creates buy pressure on the Rune asset, which is obviously a good thing. But once you get the POL involved, it could potentially have a negative effect on the Rune price, which we don't want that for obvious reasons. That's why if you go to 50% utilization, then it's for every $1 of savers that goes in, the POL would put in $1 of Rune. And so it becomes an equal. So there's a net zero effect on the Rune price. There's a dollar buy pressure and there's a dollar sell pressure. Everything's just level and even, and we don't have to worry about any negative effects to the Rune asset in the long term. So that's why that's where the 50% number comes from. It's just to ensure we don't have any downward sell pressure on the Rune asset. Once we get to that 50% number, in order to get to a dangerous scenario, you need to get to see a 4x price change of Rune or a 4x price change of the asset in either direction, it doesn't matter which, for you to get to that scenario, which is why the POL exists at all, right? That's the intended purpose of the POL is to ensure that never really happens. That even if the Rune price were to die by 4x, the POL would jump in and provide value to protect the LPs from suffering losses.
Yeah, let's go back and just talk about the liability real quick so people understand that, because I think that's probably the most confusing part of SINTS is just like where does the SINTS liability come in here, and how does that affect current LPs? How is that taking value away from LPs as that changes? So if there's price changes, then that means that more liquidity units need to be used to pay for those synths that are held by the savers and by the ARBs that are holding synths. So like right now it's 15% of the total pool depth, correct? So that's 30% of the asset depth.
Right.
So that means like 30% of the current Bitcoin, all the Bitcoin that's held in the pool is like 770 or something last time I checked. So 30% of that can be minted, and that's currently about maxed out. So when we bring that up to 50% eventually of the entire pool depth, that will be up to the maximum of the Bitcoin that's held in the pool. So it could potentially, if there's 700 Bitcoins in the pools, we could mint up to 700 synth BTC, right?
Right.
That's the entire BTC depth.
Right.
Okay. And then as that price fluctuates if the Rune price goes down more than the Bitcoin price, especially, you know, very large amounts, then more of those units in the pools need to be going towards backing the synths. And that's how the value for the LPs can go down, because more of the value in the pools need to go towards backing the value of the synth holders / the savers. So that's right. My explanation of it, I think.
No, that's a good way of doing it. And like what's actually happening in the back end for all that is that you have LPs or have their own units, right, that represent their ownership of the pool, whatever quantity that is, which is generally very static, right? And then you have these synth units, which the network kind of holds on the behalf of the synth holders. And that number of units is dynamic. It's dynamically computed based upon, if Rune's price goes up, the number of units the synth holders have goes down. And if the Bitcoin asset goes up relative to Rune, then the number of synth units.
Right. It's basically the liability. How much of the asset is owed to the synth holders? And that changes because the price of it in comparison to Rune changes, which is what the pool itself is holding, not the units. It's holding the units themselves, but it's really holding the Rune and the asset. So that's why it changes dynamically with the price.
Right. Exactly. So, but I think part of the calculus, like at least for me, is that like by upping the synth cap and allowing more synths to come into the network, you are inherently making the pools deeper, right? You're achieving the goal in a quite literal sense. You're achieving the goal of scaling the network and having it be more successful. And by doing so, quite naturally, the room price would have some sort of correlation or relationship to it, not necessarily a one-to-one or whatever, but it, you know, if the network is being successful, then the room price should reasonably so follow that in some sense or form. And so the odds that the room price is underperforming Bitcoin, for example, is relatively low in that scenario, just because, you know, we're accomplishing the goal we're trying to accomplish, which is scaling the network. So that's like part of the idea is that it's statistically likely, at least not guaranteed, of course, but statistically likely that Rune will perform well as we achieve the goal of scaling the network.
Could you just walk through like what would actually happen if there was a 4x price change? Because obviously like from this point, that seems really unlikely. But if you looked at from like a year ago or so pricing, then it starts to seem like that probably happened or so. So like what's the flow? I mean, the POL would like sort of be the first cushion, right? So does that mean LPs would sustain higher than a 4x, or I don't know, can you just walk through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you could think about the POL in some sense as being like a bodyguard or a bouncer for the LPs. And so as the risk to LPs increases, the POL takes on that risk and takes it away from the LPs, right? Like the actual only risk the LPs have really is relative to the synth cap, whatever quantity that is. Which right now is at 50% of the pool depth. And I think a lot of people are pushing, or at least some of the devs are pushing for 50%. So that risk is being, you're taking a higher leverage room position as being a dual-sided LP person, whatever that is. But you don't go beyond that, because if the synths go beyond that point, then the POL comes in and puts it back down to 50%. So it maintains protection at that amount. But imagine for a moment that there wasn't a POL. Imagine for a moment that there was like a 5x price change or a 6x price change, something like this, right? And we've hit the scenario. For synth holders, they don't quite depeg in a sense, because the network will still redeem a one-to-one ratio between your synthetic Bitcoin and your layer one Bitcoin. It's just doing a swap, right? In a disaster scenario like this, like all the synth holders, or at least the synth holders who want to leave, they can leave and get their money back. And eventually at some point, if you have enough people leave, that like somebody's left holding the bag, you know, or whatever that is, right? Or the swap fees become expensive because the pool is getting more and more shallow. And so the higher fees are being taken out, blah, blah, blah. And so like that can happen. So like it's even if that cross that threshold, there's no immediate danger to synth holders in that particular moment. People can still leave. People can still get the, you know, one Bitcoin out for their one, you know, synthetic Bitcoin. That all that math is still the same and still works just fine. But we would probably wouldn't even get to that place just because the POL is there to provide capital to the network to increase the amount of value in the pools so that we maintain protection.
Right. So we have the vote going on right now to determine what's happening with the synth cap. So that is going on right now. So if you're a node operator, I would recommend going in and checking out the vote and voting. There's some debate on whether to raise it to 30% of the pool depth as a, you know, as a middle stop before going to 50. But, you know, the end goal eventually is 50% of the pool depth, which is basically the asset depth in each of the pools. And then we'll start getting POL turned on. And I don't know if you have more thoughts about, you know, when we start turning on POL. So I guess that should be probably pretty soon after the synth cap is voted on. So probably within the next week or two, right?
Yeah, probably. I think once we get to the 50%, we definitely don't need to get there. We just turn on POL and set it to 50%. It's actually a little bit more complicated than that because you would actually set the POL to 40% with a 10% buffer so that it starts adding liquidity at 50% and it starts withdrawing liquidity at 30% just so we don't thrash the pools constantly adding and taking away like all day long. It wouldn't be very efficient capital or just create unnecessary transactions on the network. But we can do that at any point and then just raise the caps. You know, and I guess technically we would actually raise the synth cap to like not 50%, but like 55%, just to create a little space between where the POL enters and
where the right. So there's always a little buffer there where the POL is just adding in liquidity continuously and keeping the utilization stable below the total cap.
Right, because the synth cap would hit me like maybe let's just say 55, for example. It gets pushed to 55, and then the POL pushes down to 50. And then more savers enters, which gets pushed back to 55, and then the POL pushes back down to 50, and this becomes this kind of like, you know, back and forth. And as we're doing that, more and more savers are entering. The pools are getting deeper, and we're providing more capital and cheaper fees for transactions and all this kind of stuff. It's like achieving what we're trying to achieve of getting deeper pools.
What if the synth cap is hitting not because of new savers being added, but because of the rune price dropping, and then in that case the reserve would be adding even more rune into the pool? And that doesn't necessarily mean new savers are coming in at that point, right? So is that a situation that's kind of bad for rune if that's happening?
That's a totally thing that can and will likely happen. Like, you know, rune will just have a bad day, whatever, and we hit the synth cap, and then the POL adds more rune and then maybe withdraws the next day when rune recuperates, or like it can happen in either direction, right? When your rune's having a great day and then the centralization goes down and then more savers add without the POL even taking a larger position, it can happen in either direction. The negative about that scenario, say that happens, and the rune price goes down by, let's just say 10%, and then the POL adds more rune to the pool, which is adding rune to the pool and causing sell pressure on the rune asset in that context. So there is a little bit of reflexivity there for sure. It's not death spiral style stuff. It's not like anything anybody should be concerned about. But there would be a little bit of reflexivity there.
Brought up someone who requested to speak, Major Nelson. Hey.
Yeah, don't worry. Just keep on going with yourself. I've just wait when everything is done. No worries.
All right. Sounds good. Well, is there anything more on POL? Like, it's up in the air right now, just like when it's going to get turned on, but it's imminent, but it's going to be after the synth cap gets raised. And then once the synth cap that gets raised, that effectively doubles the amount of space in the savers vault, like the total cap of the savers vault. So there's going to be a good amount of time between those, most likely.
So yeah, one question on that is, so you don't want to have 50% synth without POL, right? Because that's then you just have the 4x and no bodyguard, right? So like these will probably come out roughly around the same time, maybe, like, right? Yeah,
so when myself and other devs were like working on the synth like just the general concept of since like many moons ago. And we were analyzing the risk, the pros and the cons, the risks, all that kind of stuff. And we obviously recognize that you don't want to have like 100% synth utilization because that would be, you know, quite dangerous to do. And so we did some analysis of like, what is a reasonably, you know, safe place to be. I think the number we came up with was like, I want to say it was like 30% or something like this, or 33% or something like this. I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but it was like a year and a half ago. I can't really remember. And so we kind of like, well, you know, like the closer you get to a full 100% utilization, the more risk that takes on. And you can probably associate it to be in an exponential way and not linear. And so we was like, well, the point of synths is really just for ARBs to ARB. And so ARBs aren't going to need 100% of the pool depth to ARB the pool. Like that's completely silly. And so they're only actually going to really want to use like 10 or 20% or something like this. And so it'll just naturally, you know, and synths don't have a purpose other than arbitrage the pools. And so we don't need to worry too much about this because they're only going to use a small percentage anyway. And there's no reason to hold a synth other than for ARB purposes because there's no yield potential on it. We wouldn't take on protocol risk for Bitcoin. Why just freaking hold some real Bitcoin? And so we weren't terribly concerned about it. But then we started talking about savers and like yield bearing synthetics. Then we had to kind of real hypothecate on this idea. And that's when like we did, that's why we didn't do savers in the beginnings, because like we didn't want to take on, you know, higher synth utilization and just take on more risk. And it wasn't until we came up with the idea of the POL that like, oh, this is the counterbalance to the risk. This will take away the risk on an on-demand basis by free market conditions, and it can, you know, scale quite well and efficiently and maintain, you know, or you know, not allow risk to spiral out of control, as long as the POL can do what it does, right? And I talked about this in a tweet thread when we launched Savers 3 weeks ago, what it was. I laid out like all the risks, like how synths can go wrong, how Savers can go wrong. I had this long thread that explains in relatively good detail. And so one of the things we have to be weary about or be concerned about is situations where the POL is no longer able to add liquidity, right? And because we put a cap on the quantity of runes that we allow the POL to do, or we hit the hard caps of the pools and the POL is not allowed to add more rune to the pool, or the price of rune is moving so fast downward, or the price of Bitcoin is moving so fast upward, or they're both moving in both directions, you know, away from each other faster, then the POL can respond and the POL can actually add rune, right? Like it's adding rune slower than the speed of which rune is moving in terms of price wise. And so there's a few changes that I actually would like to make to the POL myself, just to kind of be more defensive in this regard, right? Like for example, to allow, if the price is moving quickly, to allow POL to add more rune faster. And the reason why we didn't do that initially is because the faster you add rune, the more slippage that the reserve takes on, which we don't like to have slippage. But if the price is really moving fast, then we don't really care about the slippage. Just support the LP, support the network, and that's perfectly fine. And the other thing I wanted to change was, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but like, is that allow the POL to add liquidity even beyond the economic, the hard cap of the pools, just because the most important thing is to protect the LPs and protect the network as a whole. And while that does open up the financial opportunity for a Sybil attack, Sybil attacks take 6 to 7, 8 months to actually do, because you need to buy that lit rune. You have to get all your nodes churned in while your other nodes are getting churned out. And it's just like a very arduous and difficult process. And what's more important is the immediate thing that's happening now in the market, rather than something that might happen in 6 or 7 months from them. And then if we get that problem, we can always just deal with it then. Likely LPs will just naturally leave anyways, because they're making basically zero yield. And so it would likely just solve itself within the next day or two, most likely, just because as an LP, you're earning zero yield. So you're going to withdraw your savers or withdraw your LP position, which will just naturally put the economic security back into play correctly. But the most important thing is to protect the network and the market conditions that it's in. So there's a few changes I want to make just to make it more more defensive.
Cool, that makes sense. One other question I have here. So in the dev Discord, there's kind of like a nice summary of the core team thoughts around the 50% and the Nine Realm thoughts around 30% as a stepping stone to 50%. And Let me just read this because it'll bring up my question. So the core thoughts: we know 15% is safe. It's time to go up and capture more market share. Should be at 50% to stop price reflexivity. Ultimately could go up to 80% for maximum capital efficiency. Since the liquidity demand of synth exiters can be met with just 20% of liquidity. That part, the 80% and the 20%, is still kind of confusing to me. Could you clarify that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the viewpoint of one of the devs. I don't know how I feel about that, to be honest with you. Like, I'm not sure if I agree with that mentality personally. That's something that me and that dev should sit down and kind of hash out and talk in more detail. I think for right now, we shouldn't really consider too much about going to 80% or whatever. We should just worry about, you know, the immediate goal of just trying to get to 50 or even 30. If you want to go to 30, that's fine with me as well. But I wouldn't want to go above 50 personally until I've had more conversations with that person to understand their viewpoint. And maybe there's something that they understand that I've missed, which is totally possible. You know, that person's a very smart individual. But I'm not sure if I fully agree with that perspective.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. One other thing is, so there's kind of this concept like the POL is buying strong assets on the way up and selling weak assets on the way down, right? So does POL lose in any cases? I mean, you know, like what is the risk kind of like to the reserve? Can the reserve end up with way less rune in some situations? Obviously, it's, you know, the ownership is there, but can it like take huge losses in some scenarios?
Yeah, that's a good question to ask. So what the reserve is doing is it's taking its rune, which it has approximately 170 million of it. It's not going to use 170 million. We put literally a hard cap on it, so like a million to start, you know, and then we can up it over time if you want to. But like, it takes that rune and it deploys it in the pool, and then it owns part of the pool, which includes the other side, the asset side, not just the rune side, but also the asset side. And so the reserve is taking on the price risk of Bitcoin and the price risk of Ether and the price risk of X, Y, and Z, right? Most likely, most of the price risk would be on Bitcoin. Because as we can see from Savers right now, like I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but it looks like it to be like 60 or 70% of all the Savers is in the Bitcoin pool. Bitcoin Savers are very, relatively speaking, relatively like less on, you know, Litecoin. I think Bitcoin Cash is pretty high utilization, which that was surprising to me to see. But Bitcoin's by far the largest, I think.
Yeah, all 24 Savers on the Bitcoin Cash pool are filling that out.
But even then, like Bitcoin Cash, like the dollar value of the Bitcoin Cash is relatively small because the pool is relatively small, and the pool is like the biggest pool we have by a good margin. It's like nearly half of all liquidity is in the Bitcoin pool, something like this. So the price risk that the reserve takes on is relative to its owning of the pools, and the more shallow that a pool is, the less price risk that it takes on. And the bigger the pool is, the more price risk that it takes on. Because if you have, you know, 50% utilization in the Bitcoin pool, that's a lot of Bitcoin that the network's gonna you know, be a part of or own. And if you're taking 50% in the, you know, Doge pool, which is very like shallow, that's not much exposure, not much risk, not a lot of Doge that it's actually holding, right? So your question of like, can the reserve like lose? Of course, right? Like if Bitcoin's price goes down or Doge price goes down, yeah, it will lose in that scenario. The reserve is basically taking on almost like an ETF position where it's just like holding the general position of crypto relative to the depth of the pools and saver utilization. But also at the same time, it's also gaining a yield from being an LP. Like it's actually just like a regular LP, just like anybody else in the world. And it's generating its own yield from the swap fees that are being like collected in the pool and stuff like that. It's a little more complicated than that because technically what's happening is the reserve is what's paying out the block rewards, right? And so the block rewards are being basically paid out to himself. Like the reserve is the POL, right? So it's like taking block rewards and some percentage of that is being paid to itself, which being collected back into the reserve again. And so it's not quite at the same as like a regular LP because the yield for regular LP, I think it's like, I want to say it's 85% of the yield of an LP is from block rewards and 15% is from actual swaps and transactions. But the LP is, but the POL is actually an LP. It is actually taking some percentage of the yield that the pool is generating. And so it's taking on yield from that. So it has, that obviously reduces the risk to the reserve. Over a longer period of time, I suspect that the reserve will be just, you know, making money. And we actually already have the like API endpoints to be able to track how the reserve is doing, how the POL is doing in terms of like, is it winning money? Is it gaining money? Is it losing money? Which directions are going? I'm sure there's going to be days where it's up and there's going to be days where it's down. My hypothesis is that it's going to be largely up. It's just because as an LP, you are largely up as an LP, right? Over like a long period of time, maybe not in like 3 days, but if you look over like 100 days or something longer, the longer you position you take, the more likely you're going to be up.
Right. And the whole point is to sustain these positions for many, many years. So that way these positions can be maintained and they'll grow over the years, right? Like it's not a short-term POL thing. The protocol is going to be owning this liquidity and, you know, building these positions as Savers grows, which will grow with the network.
Yes. And there's a natural tendency that like, as the asset is mooning, right, the protocol will acquire more of those assets. And as that asset is dumping in price, the protocol reduces its risk to that asset. So it's like a natural like trading algo sort of. And it's not really designed to be a trading algo, but like it's behaving like one in some sense, just by an artifact of trying to protect the LPs.
Right. So if let me just think this through out loud. So if the POL is putting Rune in, let's say to Doge, and then Doge goes down. So let's say utilization drops to 40% or whatever point where the POL would withdraw back, right? So then, mm-hmm. So at that point, the POL has put in some amount of Rune and is ultimately withdrawing out less Rune. Mm-hmm. So reserve loses some Rune, but that Rune has now kind of been like accelerated emissions in a sense, right? Because it's just in the pool, like it's in circulation now.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of it like when the POL enters a pool, it is technically what's actually happening is it's taking Rune from the reserve and adding it to a pool, which is basically increasing circulating supply of the Rune asset in the interest to help scale the network, right? And then the inverse is happening when the reserve is withdrawing position, it's reducing circulating supply of Rune. That's fair to say.
Cool. Yeah, I think that all makes sense to me. Is there any questions specifically about POL? We can bring people up if people have questions about that or about the synth vote. If anyone wants to come up and comment on any of those things. Yeah, I guess it's just a straight vote to see whether we go right up to 50 or whether we make a pit stop at 30% of the pool depth first. Bringing up K coefficient here, requests to come up.
With the pit stop, POL would still likely be turned on at that point. It's just there's kind of like you're adding safety in one sense, but you're also then the POL is also putting cell pressure, right? So it's kind of like a trade-off middle ground where it's like safer, right, in some senses, well, but actually, also riskier in some senses.
Actually, let me ask Chad about this because this is the way I think about it. So if we start adding, say we go up to 30% of the pool depth, right? We make this pit stop before going to 50 and we turn on POL and then we also increase the POL parameters afterwards when we change it to 50. Wouldn't it only be a temporary cell? So the POL would be adding more Rune in now than is necessary. Then it is like, I guess, capital efficient, I guess, to scale the Savers. It's adding in more dollar values worth of Rune than Saver space it creates. But when you increase the synth cap later, wouldn't that create all that lost extra Savers space and be like a net neutral at the end where it didn't create all that cell pressure? Or is that not correct?
Yeah, I mean, my advice or my personal standpoint, my two cents, is that we don't enable the POL until we get to 50%, at least 50% utilization on the synth side. So we can make the pit stop at 30%, and that's fine. And we can even enable the POL that it starts to kick in once it hits 50. We can do that today if we really wanted to. But my advice is we do not turn on the POL because I don't want to see the price reflexivity, the negative price reflexivity on the Rune asset that comes from the success of the Savers. Like the point of Savers is to make the pools deep and not to and help the Rune price go up, but it doesn't really quite do that so much if every time somebody adds to Savers they there's a bunch of room that's being sold in the market. Like that's kind of almost counterproductive in some sense. And so we can make a pit stop just to make a pit stop. If people want to do that, that's fine with me. But I wouldn't advise to enable the POL until we get to 50% utilization. Did I answer all your questions, like Thoreau? Because I know you had a bunch of questions. I want to make sure that I've answered your cues.
Yeah, no, I think so. I can't think of any other specific ones at the moment. But I just find this aspect personally like harder to grasp even than the lending design and things like that. Like just kind of like the risks with like the leverage of leveraging LPs and I don't know. It's still hard to get my head completely around, but you answered all my questions.
Yeah, I think for me, like synths in general play. You don't get synths for free. Like there's always risk that comes with having any feature in a network for the most part. Sometimes you can have ones that are free, but like generally speaking, there's always risk to anything any service you're providing. And I think for me, we always wanted to keep synths relatively low because we were aware of that risk, and there was no counterweight to that risk. There was no way to balance that risk out. And we thought about like using like, you know, synthetic rune as a counterbalance. We explored like tons of different ideas of how we can have a counterbalance to it, and none of them really felt very effective or very good at doing what they do. For me, the POL is quite effective. And as long as it's able to do what it's doing and it's not like disabled or turned off or there's some problem with where it can't behave in the way that it's designed to behave, and it can add liquidity as fast or as slow as it needs to in order to accomplish the goal that it's trying to accomplish, then I don't really have any qualms or concerns about kind of the synth disaster scenario that you know could happen on mathematical paper, because I think the POL will do exactly what it needs to do to ensure that everything stays safe. So I'm not really terribly concerned personally about getting to 50% as long as we put on the POL.
Yeah, that makes sense. Where my confusion still is just like how the POL affects the rune price, really, because you have new rune coming in. And then this rune is, you know, buying pool share, and like, do ARBs react the same way? Because it's new rune in the pool. So it's like you have X amount of Bitcoin in the pool and Y amount of rune, and now suddenly you have more rune. So it's like,
right. But the savers by itself counteracts that. In the case where somebody's adding savers, you're adding a bunch of Bitcoin to the pool, but you're not adding rune. And so now now you're creating, you know, buy pressure on the rune asset. And then conversely, when the POL adds rune, you have too much rune and not enough Bitcoin. So people will create sell pressure on the rune asset. So those things balance out. But what you were saying before is correct in saying that if the rune price, you know, changes and then we add more rune, that's creating sell pressure. And the rune price changes and the rune price goes up, then we're creating buy pressure on the asset. So it's just like, so like if rune goes up or down, the POL will kind of in some ways exaggerate or make it slightly more volatile, the rune price. Like it'll push it a little higher or push it a little bit lower. But the amount of that, like the actual dollar amount would be in my opinion, would be like sub penny, right? It would be such a small amount that I'm not really terribly concerned about. There is some level of reflexivity for sure. Mathematically, you can prove that on paper, but the amount of reflexivity, in my opinion, is relatively small. That I'm not really terribly concerned about it personally.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So where we're at now, every dollar of savers basically creates 50 cents of rune buy pressure, essentially, right? Whereas my understanding with this is it kind of cancels each other out and creates a net neutral situation for rune is what I'm understanding, except it still is deepening the pools. Like there's still a lot of benefits of it, but it's kind of like every new saver that comes in is counteracted by the POL. So it kind of creates like a net neutral on rune. Is that right?
That's right. That's only if you do it at 50%, right?
Right. Right.
If we were to say, let's not do it at 50%, let's do it at 75% or 80%, well, now it's going to be a 2-to-1 difference where every dollar of savers that goes in will create $2 of buy pressure on the rune asset. Like that's the benefit. If you want to argue, as that other dev might, that we should push it up to 75 or 80% or some number, you effectively have a doubling. You have a buy pressure of like, you know, of $2 for every sell pressure of one or something like this. Like it's net positive on the room price. And that's the value of doing it, right? That's why we don't want to go at 25% enter the PO, because then we're doing, you know, a bunch of sell pressure on the Rune asset. So 50% is neutral. Low of the 50% is net negative Rune, or like net sell pressure on Rune. And then above 50%, it's net buy pressure on Rune. But then you have the risk of Cincin, like their value relative to LPs, and the additional risk that LPs take on being, you know, more leverage to the Rune asset for, you know, the higher that synth cap is hit, right? So that just all becomes part of the calculus and the thing that the community as a whole needs to discuss, debate, argue about, and determine what we feel as a community is right. I'm happy to share my two cents, but obviously I don't dictate what happens in this community or this project. So I just try to educate and inform people and tell people as straightforward as I can what the pros are, what the cons are, what the risks are, so that everybody makes an informed decision. And then, you know, nodes vote to say, this is what is best for the network.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. I like the idea of what you said is, even if we take the 30% pit stop, maybe POL is already activated at 50%. And then in case weird price action makes it get to that point, then like that could be the POL kicking in for the first time. And it's still at the 50% neutral spot rather than the. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Cool. Let's bring up some questions. Kid Coefficient, what's up?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Just a couple questions. There was some talk of like a rune savers feature, and how that might play into the POL. And two, is the reserve or the treasury already essentially in a POL position? Like, didn't Thorchain seed some of the pools back in the day, like Doge and? Probably.
The treasury does have LP positions. The reserve is just the module that emits rewards. So the treasury does have positions, but that's a like a discretionary fund. That's not like a it's separate from the reserve, which is like a protocol fund. The treasury is discretionary, but yes, that did like seed Doge and has LP positions and a couple. Different pools. You can see those wallets on VBlock.
Yeah. I didn't know if it was from treasury or reserve or for calling that POL or not. I know it's kind of the opposite, but essentially in the long run, it's the same position. Like those POL LP units are earning yield and, you know, et cetera. So I was just wondering about that.
The treasury did like contribute some value to the pools in the early days, just to kind of like get some depth to them, so you can have a reasonable trade and not be you know ganked on fees or whatever. To be honest, I can't even remember off the top of my head like how much the treasury has in each pool, and it's public information, so you can go to LP to Thor yield whatever and look it up and see what the actual positions are, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I checked this last week. It's somewhere around 8 million in LP positions on Thorchain, spread out between most of the major pools and some of the smaller ones too.
Okay, all right. Can you add some AVAX to that, please? Just kidding.
I'm petitioning for that. I mean, I think we do need the treasury in on AVAX. Like, we need those pools deeper for AVAX. So I'm all in on that.
Please. yeah. What about the rune savers feature? Is that even possible? I don't know.
So I just shared a tweet that I was just talking to somebody the other day about this concept. And so it is something that is being discussed and kind of researched. And my view on it is that I'm not a big fan of it personally, because it doesn't actually accomplish anything for the network itself. Like, yes, it helps rune people earn more rune, which is, you know, the community I'm sure would enjoy, but it doesn't actually accomplish the scale or expansion of the network itself. Like, whenever you earn a yield, it should always come from like external things.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Yeah.
You can't just like stand in a circle and jerk each other off. Like, it just doesn't really.
Yeah, yeah. I've always advocated like you need to LP your rune or run or bond it. That's it.
Right. You know? Right. But exactly.
Then, you know, we have the savers feature, and now we're pulling rune from the reserve. And there's a lot of people out there that just hold on to rune because they're greedy idiots. But you know, whatever. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, they're just speculating on it. Like, why don't we use that rune as like, you know, it's not POL, it's not reserve rune, but you know, it could be in place of reserve rune.
Yeah. So if we were to do savers for rune, like straight up the same way savers is, it would just increase risk to the protocol. For sure. Like the synth risk that we were talking about earlier actually increases. It doesn't counterbalance the asset synth. It actually increases the general synth risk. It doesn't seem that way when you first think about it. And then I thought it would counteract it. And then I did the math and explored it mathematically speaking. And I just kept on finding over and over again that it would just increase risk and potential problems for the networks. And I just, which kind of just turned me off on the whole idea of it. Okay. But you could do it in a way where instead of doing savers and rune savers in the traditional saver sense, instead you give up your rune to the reserve, right? And it's the reserve starts deploying your rune instead of its own rune, right? And so it can assist the reserve in some sense, which is positive in one sense. But in the end, the POL is going to deploy X number of rune. Right, depending upon what the market requires, whatever.
Yeah, because the price.
And so, and so the total amount of rune deployed to the pool would be the same whether or not you added your rune to the reserve or you didn't. And so, by adding your rune or not adding your rune, you're not actually increasing the depths of the pools, because if you didn't do it, the reserve would do it, and if you did do it, then the reserve wouldn't do it. And so, it's like a net nothing. Right. There's no actual improvement to the depth of the pool in that context. There's no actual improvement to the volume trades, and there's no to the security of the network either.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what makes me feel like it's not worth it. But not to mention, if we did launch this thing, the quantity of rune that we would deploy into the POL would be far less than the quantity of rune that people would put up to be deployed, which means that the yield would be, you know, likely the yield would be incredibly small for rune holders. They would get like, you know, sub half percent probably or something like this, because there'd be such a high demand for it, because everybody wants to earn rune the rune, because this community loves rune for some reason, right? Obviously we're all big rune fans, and so you don't earn your rune is just like in a very easy and straightforward way. It's obviously been very popular. That's why you see, you know, on, you know, Atom, for example, it's like 90 something percent of people are delegated and proof is, and are, you know, put up their Atom to some staker. You have high percentage of participation. And if the participation is that high, but the yield is that low, it would just be, you know, it wouldn't be worth it. I don't know. That's just my two cents.
Oh, I agree. I was just like, you know, if people could see that, like, you're not, if you just staked your rune in this scenario, you're not going to earn much money because you're not really contributing anything to the network. So you don't you wouldn't necessarily like quote unquote deserve a high yield on it because it doesn't really do anything.
What you're doing is you're assisting the reserve. So the reserve is taking on deploying less rune itself. And for doing so, you know, the reserve would take 50% of your yield and you would take 50% of your yield. And so that's like the trade-off. It's like, but why wouldn't the reserve just take on, you know, just use its own room, which it happily has large quantity of, and just get 100% of the yield. Right. And, you know, why wouldn't it just do that instead? Like, you know, so it becomes that kind of interesting thought and debate to have.
Yep. Yeah. I still think, if you don't want to LP, then, you know, put your other asset into savers and then bond your rune in a pool. Done.
Yeah. You can do it however you want, but that's one way to go with it.
All right. Over. Thanks.
Thanks, Kay. Kenton.
Hey, guys. Awesome. Thanks for doing this. They're always great. So let's just the scenario here. We get the synth cap to 50%. Protocol, the POL kicks in, and let's pretend it owns like 10% of the pool. What happens when a new LP comes in, like a human comes in and deposits money, does that slowly wind down the POL to get to zero?
So there's a target synth depth. And if someone, this is my understanding of this, if someone deposits and that makes the synth depth decrease because you've increased the asset depth, but synths remained unchanged, that means the POL would start to remove some of its position to maintain it wherever the target depth is. So if the depth is currently at 50%, the synthetic asset usage is at 50%, which would be the max here. And then POL will add when it's over 50% and take out when it's below 50%. Is that about right?
Yes, I think your answer to my question is yes. So as new humans come in with new LP capital, it's basically just buying it off the reserve until the reserve no longer...
It's swapping positions with the reserve in some sense, depending upon what the synth utilization is. Like the synth utilization is at 45% or something like this, then you know there's no relationship here. There's no swapping up positions. But if the reserve is at 50% and somebody's entering or leaving or whatever, the POL is just swapping positions. It's like it's almost like you can think about the POL as like the LP of last resort. To ensure that the capital, enough capital is in the pools to back the synths. It's always going to ensure that, right? To make sure that the synths are good, in a good place, and the LPs are not getting fucked with overexposure. It's always there to support the LPs and support the savers.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yep. No problem. Juggernaut was up here. Okay, he's gone. Ellis. Hey,
I had a quick question about the synth cap. So we're at, I think, 15% right now. And my question was, if we go to, is each percentage increase a linear increase, or is that, is there some multiplier on that? So if we go to 30%, do we get double the amount of current liquidity we can handle in savers, or does it go up some more than that? Thanks.
No, it basically doubles. So like all of a sudden we got 4 million or so, whatever the hell the number is in savers. And so we can go to, probably 8 or higher.
So the, it seemed to me that, the best case scenario would be like we go to 30% and then the price of room just keeps going up and we never have to enable the POL. That would be like the best case scenario, right? In some sense.
I mean, that's a possible case scenario because as we go up and we add more, savers in there, that means the pools are getting deeper, which is a good thing. But it also means that the yield is coming down because the incentive pendulum is swinging towards the nodes and away from the LPs. And so there is that kind of hypothetical scenario where we never even get to 50% because once we get even, we're close to 50%, the yield is low enough that new capital isn't coming in anymore, right? In a sense.
Yeah, so then if the price of rune increases, then it would increase not only the size of the pool, but also potentially the yields as well. But if you're saying we go to 30%, then in theory, it could cut the yields in half. Is that correct as well?
No, it wouldn't cut the yield. Excuse me. It wouldn't cut the yields in half. I don't know what the exact number is top of my head, but it wouldn't be anywhere close to half. In fact, it would probably be, I don't want to say a number because I feel like I'd be very wrong in saying it without doing the actual math, but it wouldn't be that much for anywhere close to that.
Yeah. And that's because you're only adding depth to the, sorry. So in this scenario, it doesn't actually decrease the yield by half because it just decreases the amount that each LP would be getting from this scenario because each LP's share is slightly decreasing, but you're not actually increasing the overall liquidity that much. We're just doubling this like $3 million of liquidity. So that's not actually decreasing the overall yield, but it's decreasing the yield to each LP.
I see.
Yeah, it's complicated because at the same time, adding another $3 million in savers is half of their yield is going to go to the LPs, right? The question is like, is the deeper pool is going to create more volume? The tendency is yes in that question because the fees become cheaper and cheaper fees just garners more trade volume typically. It's very complicated. There's a lot of moving pieces and gears to it, but the yield would come down for LP the fees, but I don't know the exact number. It's kind of hard to calculate.
Yeah, that's almost why I'd like to see it go to 30%, just so we could like have a we could see what happens when it goes to that point and have like a way of measuring, do some analysis on it.
Yeah, that's a fair position to take, right? So we can do that as a community, or we can just say we'll just go to 50. I don't care. Either way, it's fine with me.
Yeah, it's probably good to take some time, especially over the holidays too, rather than just like turning on POL like, you know, 2 weeks before the holidays and stuff like that, where people are probably going to want to like, yeah, take time away and stuff like that. Like as an interim, it might be better to just do that and then go up to 50% in January once the new caps start getting hit again, and you know, just give it more time to develop. So you know, there's two arguments there. I think, I mean, eventually it'll end up at 50. It's just, you know, the path that we take to get there.
Cool. Thanks, guys. I do kind of like that idea of like a rune staking where you could have like an insurance pool or something. That's an interesting idea. Even if it was a very small fraction, the fact that there is no current way to get any yield on rune alone, even if it was only like a quarter of a percent, would still be better than nothing.
Well, there is a way to do it, and that's running a node. But I recognize that that's not, you know, available for most rune holders.
Yep. Thanks for taking my questions. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Major Nelson, do you want to ask a question now? You can ask about anything.
Okay, sure. Cool. We had, there was like a question on Twitter like this week. I don't know if it was Thor Maximalist or something like that, from a node perspective on who should be favored like now going forward, like lending or increasing the number of chains that added. And then there was the argument coming up that right now with the current rune price, it's not really viable for node operator to add a new chain because like it costs more to add a new chain than the chain actually brings, which brings me to the point that now that the year's coming to an end, and there was always a lot of discussion with like so-called like low value adding chains still being on, like I remember it was like talks about Bcash and maybe also like Doge, who was like very low in actual participation. And I'm currently also like saving in the BNB vault, which is like one of the smallest walls with the lowest amount of BNB in it, but it still has like the lowest APY, which just shows me that like there's literally zero to none activity on the BNB, on the BEP2 chain itself. So why don't we just like have like a big discussion or a big like vote, especially from the node operators, on which chain we actually want to keep. And maybe if the node operator come to the conclusion that let's get rid of like this and this chain, because all of a sudden like those don't add up like more than 3% of all the volume, but instead of those three chains, maybe like add one new chain, which is like get rid of three, add one new, maybe like BSC or Matic or something like that, like high volume chains now. So I was just wondering, what's your opinion beyond that? Like having a year end discussion about which chain should remain in or maybe get kicked out for making space for new chains. Thank you.
Yeah, I think if anyone is a node operator and wants to get rid of chains, you could start that. Anyone could start that conversation just in the dev Discord where people normally discuss, especially just make relay. If you're a node and you want to start campaigning against having certain chains on ThorChain. And like, I mean, the argument that you bring up is totally valid. I mean, there's been two major new chain additions since the summer, and that's Atom and Avax. And the cost of running the infrastructure, so that's you know, about 100 nodes on ThorChain each running the chain daemon for Avax and Atom, it's very expensive. And I don't know if Atom covers the cost, but I know Avax for sure does not. The fees that are brought into the nodes do not cover the cost of running the actual chain. And I think it's definitely too early to like go up with bringing those. But like, if you're talking about other chains like Bitcoin Cash, unless you're thinking about it from like a security perspective, which is totally valid, of like, you know, wanting to get rid of like unnecessary surface area, in which case I think that's totally valid. Like Bitcoin Cash, like how much does it cost to run a Bitcoin Cash node a month? Probably like $50, the $100 at the most to run a Bitcoin Cash node per month. So like, while there might not be so much activity there, maybe it also doesn't make sense to remove it. And maybe I think that's just part of the equation. And part of the reason why I'd like to see like something like Dash on Thorchain, just another low cost node to run, which would add, you know, volume and through Thorchain, because it's like the Apex pool is not getting the use that it that it could be. But the liquidity is low, so it's like, you know, I think both these like just need some time to develop, and then I think eventually we could see chains being removed and added. I think Binance Smart Chain is likely to come to Thorchain, especially with aggregation. And then I think after BSC gets added, like this is just kind of like, this isn't for sure what's going to happen. This is just like my opinion on what I think is going to happen. I think that the next thing would happen is Binance Smart Chain integration in, you know, some time within the first half of next year. And then based on the results of that, and then DEX aggregation being added onto that, that's kind of where we see the future of where chains go on Thorchain. Like, are we going to start adding more? Are we going to start getting rid of some? Because if the Binance Smart Chain integration is a total flop and, you know, people don't push volume through that, then I see it as pretty grim for the adding more chains on top of that into Thorchain. But on the other hand, if that goes really well, then maybe it's still on the table. So there's definitely a discussion to be had about this, for sure.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
What do you think, Chef?
My opinion is that because we're in the bear market, and in general, liquidity is kind of hard to come by just because, you know, it's bear. And adding new chains at this point will probably not garner like large adoption or volume or liquidity, even if it's a chain that's high volume, like Apex is like, you know, it's worth a lot. The market cap of Apex is relatively high. And so instead, I think it's during a bear market, it's probably more effective or more efficient to be focused on the core fundamentals of the core chain and try to deliver things like lending and savers and these kind of things. Like, they're probably more profitable for the network or more beneficial to the network to work on these things than just to focus on chain iterations. Like, I would still like to see chains be added in general, like especially things like Monero and maybe Binance Smart Chain and maybe Dash and these other things. Like, but like especially chains that are not, that the community behind that chain is like, Dash community are asking for integration. Like, and so they're showing that they're interested and that the liquidity will be there because we have people yelling from the Dash community about, hey, getting Dash added. But if we don't have anybody from the Binance Smart Chain community saying, hey, where's Binance Smart Chain? Like, it just doesn't exist. And so that makes me feel like this, even though it's a high market cap asset with a bunch of like DEX aggregation and whatever, nobody's asking for it. And so it probably wouldn't get utilized all that much, you know? And so, but I think that lending in order books and savers and like these things would get utilized because it offers something that nobody else can offer. And I think that would just be more beneficial.
Yeah, well,
I'll just add one quick thought, which is like, it's entirely too soon to call any of them like a flop, you know, like AVAX or even if BSC was added. And I understand the node operator perspective, because with the Rune price low, you know, they're like not that far away from not making a whole lot of money on their costs, right? But if, you know, if Rune was even, I don't know, $3 or something, that would probably change this equation a lot, right? And it might make sense even at that level to add another chain or two. But, you know, I think with all the integrations,
throw you. Are you speaking?
Oh yeah, he's speaking. You probably just can't hear him. So,
oh shoot,
I'll let you know when he's done speaking. And oh. can keep speaking.
Okay, yeah, just real quick. Just with all the integrations coming too, as well. Like, you know, Thorchain and aggregation showing up on external places, right? Like, not just on our own ecosystem projects. You know, I think naturally over time, there's just going to be new entry points into Thorchain that we're not seeing right now, right? Like when this is powering so many wallets and integrated into existing DEXs and aggregation, like that volume is going to come. And yeah, it is the bear, but like, you know, something like AVAX or BSC someday are going to be doing tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of volume, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, there might be some like room for tweaking. Like, I think it is arguable whether to like, I think there's an argument that could be made for like replacing Atom with like Osmosis for aggregation or something like that. But I think there's no like major changes that like need to be made right now, just like from my own opinion. But I do think that the argument against, the argument for BSC is that it actually does, you could argue whether it's real volume or not, but there is, if you look at Rango Exchange, the volume, like if you do analysis there, you see that Binance Smart Chain is like always right there with ETH in volume. And like we have great volume. Some of our biggest volume chains are the Binance Beacon Chain ones, which are literally zero volume anywhere else. So like I think there's a pretty clear case, especially with like the places where Thorchain is going to be in the next couple of months. It makes sense to, you know, get like a pancake swap aggregator on top of BSC and then start pushing a bunch of volume through that. Like I think that would be wildly successful. But then again, I also said that AVAX would be wildly successful beforehand. And although we haven't seen that yet, it'll go in that direction. But the point is that AVAX doesn't have that same volume trend on other aggregators like Rango Exchange or just any of these other multi-chain DEXs. BSC is always on top of those when you compare to, you know, something like Avalanche. Polygon's up there too. And ETH layer 2s are like super interesting, but yeah, just the cost is the hard selling point right now.
What is it like? Is it like 1500 per node operator? How much would a chain like that add? Do we kind of have an estimate of that?
Hey, Pluto was here, I'd ask him. So I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, like I think like one of the points is also like I guess a lot of volume on the BEP2 chain is coming from like BUSD since it's just the cheapest and fastest like stablecoin to trade on, and I think that would also be like on BSC as well. So maybe like if BSC is added, then one could have the argument or the discussion about okay, maybe retiring the BEP2 chain after BSC is launched. Maybe that could free up some space. And also like from the argument that Chad made before, like maybe there is not a lot of volume going through BSC. We only know that when it's up and running. That's true, because like, which is also like unique to the BSC chain and the BNB chain itself. It's like that probably, I don't know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess like 99.99999% of all BSC users have a Binance account. So, I mean, I don't know how large their hunger for like cross-chain swap is when you can take your BSC, BUSD and just transfer it to Binance and buy your BTC over there. Like, I don't know how attractive that will be. Like, that's also some point to Chad's point before. But that's from my side. Thanks very much for taking my question.
Yeah.
And by the way, node operators, I feel like there's been a push, you know, the last like month or two about node operators getting off of like cloud providers and building their own physical bare metal, because it's in the bear market, they're producing less yield, right? And their cost has been the same. Their operational cost is the same, about like $3,000 or $4,000 per month of operation, which is, you know, was that $40,000 or $50,000 a year of operational costs. But if you have a bare metal box where you spend maybe $5,000 or $10,000 for that box, like you just buy it once and there's no monthly fee to it, so you just like it's so much cheaper to run on bare metal. So because of that, I think I've seen like quite a few node operators are starting to move away from cloud and moving towards bare metal, just because it's much more efficient and cost effective for them to do so.
Yeah, that's a great point. And another thing is just, I think the most ideal scenario is all these new integrations bring so much volume. You know, Savers keeps taking off. Rune starts burning with lending. This equation could be really different, like in really soon potentially, right? And you know, like nobody was talking about how much it costs to add a chain when Rune was $15 and node operators were just absolutely raking it in, right? So yeah, I don't know. I'm just hopeful that it doesn't get like too shelved. But at the same time, I understand just like that node operators can't be losing money, because then they're going to start leaving and we have to keep those incentives up. But at the same time, like there's so much expansion room to like really fulfill this vision still. And like that's going to, in my eyes, that's going to require like, yeah, BSC and aggregation, Osmosis and aggregation, like even AVAX is going to end up being super important at some point, I think, even maybe Solana at some point. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just time to push it to the back of the shelf right now. I mean, it has been, that's been like the general consensus. I think totally with Chad's like, not, we don't need to do this right now, but I think in the first half of next year, like there will become an opening to do this. And then, you know, we take those openings whenever they're available. So hopefully we get there. Cause it's like, if you think about this from like the logical, like evolution of Thorchain, and let's just say like, you know, like hypothetically, for example, there's many people doing swaps in like Trust Wallet, for example. How many of them you think have BNB on the BEP2 chain versus BSC? And what do you think the demand is between swapping BSC on something like Trust Wallet versus you know, Binance Beacon Chain BEP2 assets? I'm sure there is huge demand for the BEP2 assets. I know there is huge demand for the BEP2 assets, and people want to swap those. There's literally nowhere you can swap those right now. So we're the sole provider of those, but being the provider of both, that's a huge volume driver to Thorchain. And like, you know, I think the natural route is to go there and then start aggregating PancakeSwap and all the other DEXs that are there. If there even are any other DEXs, I have no idea. They're probably named after food. But hey, Ponzi Ninja.
I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but yeah, I want to just share a personal experience I recently made. So I was actually using a bit of Monero, bought that on KuCoin, and then wanted to send it to Binance and just cash out in BUSD. And what they did was they locked my account. They froze all my assets on the account, not just the Monero, like all my assets were frozen. And I had to go through this like annoying process where I had to explain to them where I bought the Monero, with which money I bought the Monero and stuff like that. So I think it would be a really, really good use case for Thorchain to add Haven and Monero. So that's the only permissionless DEX in the world right now, should, in my opinion, have a privacy option. That's just my opinion, though.
Maybe, I mean, yeah, that's like the perfect manifestation of why we need DeFi and why centralized parties and KYC and all this kind of stuff is just complete horseshit. And that's partially why I love the idea of adding Monero personally, just because having a privacy chain and a way of getting in and out of something like Bitcoin and maintaining your personal privacy to do so, if that's something that you desire or want to have for yourself, is like, it's beyond the economic value that may contribute to the Thorchain network. I'm speaking from more an idealistic perspective, and it just like that is a new form of privacy and human rights that I would just love to see it happen, right? Like, just, oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Chad, on that subject, is someone currently working on Monero on Thorchain? I don't know if that's actively being developed right now or researched.
It is actually actively being developed. So what happened was the Monero team were working on the Monero like chain client, and one of our devs, not me, but one of the devs was looking at it and was, let's just say that they were dissatisfied with the quality of the implementation. And so I think a couple of the devs in the team just decided to like basically start over, more or less, and build a different kind of structure to it. And so right now it's actually being built as a that they fork the code of Thorchain and they're adding Monero to this like fork, and kind of seeing how it works out, just to try it out, like be able to make a bunch of code changes without needing to worry about, you know, like the rest of the chain or anything else, just being able to kind of go off their own little side tangent and just kind of play around and work with this idea and just like try it out. Once that's completed, whether that gets merged back into the core, like, you know, pipeline of Thorchain, or an actual fork is launched with Monero and Bitcoin, Ethereum, and probably Thorchain itself as well, that remains to be seen or debated or discussed, whatever. But there's still strong desire to add Monero to the Thorchain ecosystem.
Is Monero on the cheaper side for notes?
Yeah, anything that's a UTXO should be pretty cheap, right? Anything that's a UTXO chain will be fairly cheap. That's basically how that works. Solana is probably like the most expensive. It's super, super massive requirements. It's like you probably spend $3,000 to $4,000 just on on the Solana one, if you want to add Solana.
Yeah, Monero has what, like 30-second block times, and like, there's no smart contracts or anything like that. It's pretty light chain, which is also why I was saying I'm in favor of Dash, just because like these light chains have very little overhead. Like they have a lot in way of like code complexity and like opening up. Like every chain is like its own like attack vector, basically. So like there is like concern from that direction, especially Monero, right? But from like the actual cost standpoint, like that's totally not an issue from those.
And by the way, like Monero is actually really complicated to integrate with. Like it's a great chain. It's well designed in many respects. Rich signatures, a lot of stuff, but that just makes it extremely difficult to handle. Like even small things, like for example, when you do a Monero transaction, you can't actually spend your that UTXO that you received for like, I think it's like 20 minutes or something like this. And so like how you do UTXO management is different. And so like what happens if somebody does a large deposit of Monero into the network and that we've just like five times the depth of the pool, and then somebody comes by and does like, you know, a massive trade, but the network doesn't even have that much Monero to be sent because of this, you know, delay on access to the UTXOs of the blah, blah, blah. Like there's so many edge cases that are just like, that's kind of a one example, but there's so many like weird and complicated edge cases, like how do we get around this, which is why there was this desire to just fork it, run off to the side and just like hash out these weird oddities and how we're going to get around X, Y, and Z and still, you know, functionally work right and maintain security and be able to have the same feature set and as the regular, you know, regular chain. It's really difficult and complex to do for sure.
Cool. Anyone else want to come up for questions?
Was that the Haven client you were talking about? Because Haven had a client ready as well, right?
No. Well, so they put together a client for Haven and one of our devs reviewed it and just was not satisfied with the code quality. And so that's what triggered that dev to go off and just build their own client for a crypto node chain like Haven or like Monero. But I think the intention is to go directly to Monero and not do Haven. But at least in that first, not that I'm saying like we'll never add Haven or anything like that, but just obviously Monero is the more valuable asset between the two of them.
Yeah, 100%. And last thing I will say about this is also, I think we, first of all, you mentioned it before, Chad, like from an ideological perspective, it would be amazing if Monero would be integrated. But I also think from a value perspective, we are underestimating, like, I think Monero within the next couple of years probably gets delisted on every major centralized exchange. And it would be a huge value add. Like, I think it would have like a huge reflexivity effect. Even if ThorChain succeeds in a sense first, that but it lists Monero, it would enable like a huge value add to Monero and makes Monero more valuable, which in turn is a more value add for the node providers as well. So I think we have to consider that scenario as well. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Think about a case like Ripple, where the SEC is doing an investigation in a matter of like, you know, a few hours, every centralized exchange like delisted Ripple because of, you know, the signal set up by the SEC. And for a lot of people, their Ripple was locked up on the exchange. They couldn't even extract it out, which is just like, you know, nutty to think about. But what if we had Ripple as a chain, for example, and I'm not saying that I like or dislike Ripple, I'm just using it as a real life example, like how would that have changed that interaction? Like would Ripple's price have dropped as far as it did like 2 years ago when this whole process started? And you know, I continue to allow people to be able to buy or sell their Ripple at will. I mean, that's just, I wish we could do that for chains that get isolated like that, for either for government purposes or in Monero's case, privacy purposes.
Edward Dunhans, hello.
Hey, everyone. First off, I just want to say I'm such a huge fan of this project. It's been such an enjoyable experience getting to learn about how this works. The design is really complicated. It's quite something to wrap your head around. But I feel like every day that I learn more about it, I'm getting a better understanding. And at this point, I'm just trying to think in the longer term about the bigger picture and about things that could potentially go wrong, because I'm so convinced of the value. I'm just wondering if there are any risks that I'm not able to see. And so I have a couple questions. The first one is, I think that there's a possibility that in the future, there's going to be a race to Bitcoin. I'm increasingly becoming a maxi. And I'm just wondering what would happen to ThoughtChain as a whole if there was just a sudden rapid increase in demand for Bitcoin. I know that the way that the slip mechanism works is that it would just very quickly become expensive for people to race into Bitcoin at the expense of all the other assets on ThoughtChain. But functionally speaking, how would that go down?
If you had a mad rush for a particular asset, let's call it Bitcoin, in terms of like its price and the whole world just kind of converging onto Bitcoin for whatever reasons, well, the other pools would probably become much more shallow because people would be dumping their ether to buy Bitcoin or whatever it might be. So the other pools would become very, very shallow. A lot of the security would go towards Bitcoin. There'd be less demand to swap between Bitcoin and Ethereum because, you know, Bitcoin's becoming the centralized focus. So Rune's value in that context of swapping becomes less valuable or less useful because nobody wants to move between Bitcoin and other chains. So the multi-chain future that ThoughtChain kind of subscribes to starts to kind of fall apart to some degree. But at the same point, because ThoughtChain's DeFi protocols are chain and asset agnostic, the new kind of protocols that we're creating, such as Savers and Lending, for example, still exists and still works. And so then all of a sudden, you have still a decentralized way to earn sats on your sats using Savers, and you can still 3x long your position on Bitcoin or to get a Bitcoin loan so that you can, you know, buy your wife a new car or, you know, whatever it is you want to do with that. And so we provide a service that nobody else in the industry has or can. I think that inherently would make us much more valuable, which would inherently cause the room price to become more valuable just because we're offering services that everybody else is nowhere even remotely close capable of doing what we're doing. And we're doing it. Yeah.
I really agree that the new functions that are being added are definitely improving the value more than just swaps. So I'm grateful for that. It does freak me out a little bit just because adding the complexity, in my perception, just because I don't have the perfect technical understanding that you guys seem to, I was a little bit burned by UST and Luna. And I thought, oh, that sounds very clever, but I didn't go far enough in trying to understand it. But from the research that I've done into Savers and into things like Synth, it seems so solid. So it's very impressive to me that you guys have been able to think this through and actually implement it. So thank you for that.
I was just going to say, like you said earlier, ThoughtChain is very complicated and it's hard to wrap your head around. And I was just thinking myself when you said that, of like, imagine trying to create it.
Oh,
if it's hard just to read about it, imagine going through the process of actually trying to invent it and architect it. That was hard.
So just imagine my disbelief when I see the announcement from ThoughtChain, and then I go onto ThoughtSwap and the functionality is already up and it's working, and what sounds too good to be true is already available to just a normal person. That's crazy. So just to not hog the mic, I just want to get my second question out. And that's, it's kind of a scary thing to talk about, but having seen what happened to, I think his name is Alex Pertsev at Tornado Cash, I think that the importance of this project is just so large, and there could be so many people actually needing this technology, needing this platform in order to do their financial transactions in order to secure their livelihoods, really. So if this project really does blow up and a lot more people start using it, and we integrate chains like Monero, is it possible that the regulators would view this as being a major threat and start coming after some of the major players in the project?
Yeah, actually, I just got a DM from Marcus the other day, one of the members of our community, and he was specifically asking about this question about, you know, being concerned, because I am really the only, not the only one from the core team. I'm the only one that's publicly facing, and then there's some people like, you know, Pluto and other people who are more public. But like, to me, it's like I'm excited for that scenario, as silly and backwards as that might sound, just because if the government wants to come after myself for writing code and you know, and publicly speaking and educating and advocating for something like what 4chain does, if they want to come after me and like arrest me and take me down because of that, I will be fucking happy to take you ass on, because code is free speech, and to have a legal court proceeding that would definitively set that as a basic concept of, you know, American law, for example, is worth the fight. Right. If they want to try to arrest me and they go ahead and do it, I will sue their fucking asses, and I will take them as far up the court as possible to make sure that code is free speech and should never be silenced or, you know, any of these kinds of things. So like, for me, it's like, yeah, that sucks for me because I'm arrested and blah, 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 and all these things. But it gives me an opportunity to fight for crypto in a new type of way that I'm not capable of doing today. And I can actually fight for the legal case in the rights of crypto and of DeFi. And imagine if I won that court proceedings and code is free speech, like imagine the green light that would give to DeFi to build and experiment and to go further down that road.
I also think about how many people in the crypto industry would then learn about 4chain and like the values that it represents, and, you know, stand behind it, which is what we saw largely in the case of Tornado Cash. It's like, you know, everyone changing their, not that that indicates support, but like, you know, people are changing their picture to Tornado Cash, and it just headlines being written about it. People like, you know, really taking this thing seriously, even if they weren't even users of Tornado Cash. And I think something similar would happen with 4chain. And I think the user count would go from, you know, whatever it is now, very vertically up, is my opinion.
Oh, well, I really respect Chad's integrity and willingness to fight for this cause down to the last. But from a selfish standpoint, I don't want to lose you from this community. You're doing such important work, and you do it with such a sense of humor and, I guess, just like a kind spirit as well. I appreciate the patience that you have with everybody to explain through stuff that's... most people will never fully understand, but they try. But would people be discouraged from using 4chain if there were some, I guess, legal uncertainties? If there were some declaration to say that you're not allowed to use 4chain, even if it's not constitutional for them to do so, wouldn't a lot of people just stay away because they're worried that their funds are going to be frozen or they're going to be sanctioned or something like that?
Possibly. That is a possible thing. I mean, even as like node operators have to think about what their risks are, right, in that hypothetical scenario. And maybe they got to move their infrastructure from Seattle to move it to, like, you know, Denmark or, I don't know, some whatever random country. That would definitely would challenge the community for sure. Obviously, with if the government released a memo saying that 4chain was, you know, illegal or I don't know, whatever the hell they would call it. Just the memo alone would be, you know, would test this community in significant ways. But my hope, my intention is that it would be kind of similar to what happened in China, you know, a year ago when they banned mining and freed the main provinces of China, and the miners just broke down their infrastructure and rebuilt it in other countries, and the hash rate's higher now than it ever was before. Like a few months later, it was higher than it ever was before. So it would definitely challenge people for sure, but it would also kind of give us an opportunity to become more decentralized to help achieve our goals.
Enforcing compliance on 4chain swaps, as in like measuring who has swapped through 4chain and then blocking them from like centralized services, sounds like the biggest pain ever just because of how Thorchain functions and its rotating vault model of it's not like there's one contract address that your funds are always coming through. Every single week, every single 3 days, those addresses are changing. This is not I think actually enforcing some kind of action there is much more difficult than something like Tornado Cash. And also completely agree with Chad that things would move to, you know, other areas where they can be compliant. Like, it doesn't need to exist geographically within the United States or any other geography. Thorchain is very resistant to, you know, take down or capture. So we would just see it pop up in a better jurisdiction. But as for like restricting the actual protocol itself, like it seems to me like it'd be pretty difficult to effectively do so and actually stop people from using it. Although, you know, front ends are a different part of that question, but it seems like it'd be very difficult to actually truly block people from trading on Thorchain or accepting coins that were traded on Thorchain.
That's my understanding as well. And the beauty of a decentralized protocol. Those are all the questions that I have, and thank you guys so much for entertaining me.
You're welcome, Edward.
Let's do one last question with JB, who's up here. Hey.
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy Friday. So I just had a quick question, because like you guys were just talking about like any ideas for like decentralized like charity distribution functionalities like in the like roadmap for this chain? Because like there's two functionalities right now of like a savers vault and like a churn list. Or like if in the savers vault, you guys are making like 25% APR, and you could take like 5% of that, put that in another bucket, add like a churn list to that bucket, and then have charities add their crypto addresses, then send that 5% to those addresses. And then you're taking away, well, you're basically taking away the transaction fees from like Coinbase, Fidelity, and Schwab, because those are the only people that send crypto to charities as donations. So I don't know if anyone thinks that would be valuable to the chain or if that's even possible.
Well, is it possible? Yes, it's technically possible. But I also think, at least in my viewpoint, that the Thorchain should always remain to be an amoral thing. It should be like nature in the sense that it has no intentions in one direction or the other. And as soon as you get charities involved or some sort of organizations that are being paid out, like requires governance, that requires conversation, and it also, you know, has Thorchain itself become take a moral stance on A, B, C, D, or E, or whatever the hell it's what's going to be. I think if people want to develop funds for charity, that this project's probably not the place for that, and people can do that through other means. So if you want to like create, for example, if you want to create a UI where you can add liquidity to Thorchain and 5% of it goes to charity, you can do that. Like create a UI saying call like yieldforcharity.com or something like this, right? And just people just can add liquidity, get a yield, and then some percentage of their yield goes to like charity A, B, or C. Like you could do that stuff on top of Thorchain, but Thorchain itself should remain just completely neutral.
Okay. Yeah, that definitely answers the question. Thank you. That makes a lot more sense.
Cool. Thanks, JB. So yeah, I think we can wrap it there. That's pretty much everything for the week. And I think next week Thorchads will be pretty happy with what's coming out the gate. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm working hard on the materials on this side. So I think things are looking real nice for the super short term here. So I hope everyone's excited for this, by the way.
Hell yeah, we're excited.
Yeah. So any final comments that you guys want to leave with? There might be some extra spaces next week, possibly like during the week at weird times. We'll see. We're trying to schedule some stuff for next week. So we'll see what happens. Trying to get some stuff done before the holidays start and things start getting a little slower for a week or two there. But
yeah, one thing we could talk about, not today, but maybe next time we didn't touch on is the whole concept of ILP and what is the future of ILP. Should we keep it, continue it, cancel it, grandfather it, whatever. That's something I think the community should start kind of discussing. Now that we have savers and we have a no IL option for people that I don't think really necessarily need ILP anymore and take on the risks that come with ILP. And so next week or maybe the week after that, we can start kind of discussing and debating as a community about the pros and cons of that.
Yeah, good call. And I think that's definitely a conversation to have, like, after we start raising the synth caps and then turning on POL, then that's the time, because then there's basically unlimited capacity in the Sabres vault, like functionally unlimited capacity. So we could, you know, then start the transition over to Sabres. Get it going. So cool, guys. Thanks so much. We'll have some special spaces next week, hopefully. If not, then we'll see you guys next Friday. And have a great weekend.
All right, guys.
Good stuff. See you guys.